Welcome to the Gym Shorts podcast series. I am your host, Kathy Smith. Today we are talking about music education. We will meet Karin Meffert-Nelson, Gustavus Adolphus Associate Professor and Principal Clarinetist at the Minnesota Opera, to talk about music as a learning tool. I'm really excited to introduce our next guest, Dr. Karin Meffert-Nelson, Associate Professor, Clarinet, Gustavus Chamber Winds. Dr. Meffert-Nelson, DMA, teaches courses in music education and music history. She maintains an active performing career as principal clarinetist with the Minnesota Opera Orchestra and through freelance work with Minnesota Orchestra, St. Paul Chamber Orchestra, Northrop Ballet Orchestra, and with productions at the State and Orpheum Theaters. She frequently appears as an adjudicator for area solo and ensemble contests and works with the woodwind sections of the Greater Twin Cities Youth Symphonies. First, Dr. Meffert-Nelson, may I call you Karin? Is that okay if I call you?
Of course, my name being as long as it is, Karin is easier. That is fantastic, yeah.
Okay, well, great. Karin, I am honored to say that I knew you when we used to play Lemon Skip It before school in Apple Valley as kids. You've grown into quite an accomplished musician, and I am in complete awe. Karin, I love to start our conversations by asking this very simple question. What was your favorite childhood book and why?
You know, I've been asked that question before, and it's funny. I put myself in, I could probably answer that a million different ways because there were so many books that I remember as a kid or that I remember reading to my own kids. But one that kind of popped up as I thought about that question this morning was Nancy Drew. I just remember reading those, and I'd have copy after copy under my bed, and I would read them over and over again.
Yes.
And what I loved, you know, and I reflect on it now, I think so much of it was that here was like this strong female character and who could do anything.
Yeah.
All of those circumstances she was put in those books, you know, and she could do anything, and that was great. And then I would also read alongside of those choose your own adventure books.
Oh, yeah.
Where they have a lot of different endings. Okay. Kind of similar like mysteries, but then those were fun too, because I loved being in that like imaginative zone of, hey, what if that story ended another way? So I thought that was fun.
Awesome, Karin.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. I just think it's so interesting to find out what people read when they're little and if it's ever like impacted them and things like that. So I just love that first question. It kind of lets us get to know each other too a little bit better. But
sure.
So Karin, at your level of musical professionalism, I guess you have not only been part of some amazing performances, but also have taught some talented and wonderful students. What would you say is most important about learning to play music?
Wow. I mean, how long is your podcast, right?
Yeah.
When you think about what's important. My teaching, just to give an overview for the listeners, is I work a lot with college students. So teaching at Gustavus Adolphus College, as I have for the last 13 years, I work a lot with students who are there as majors in anything and that just want to broaden their perspectives through the study of music. I also work with a lot of music education students, performance majors, students who want to pursue careers in music.
Okay.
But, you know, that is one like group that I work with a lot, but I also have a small studio at home where I have anywhere from a beginner to a couple of adult students who, you know, after retirement have said, you know what, for a variety of reasons, I want to learn music. So it's kind of fun to have that variety of age. So what is important about learning to play? I think, The overarching thing that I find really beautiful, and I think this could apply to visual arts, this could apply to, you know, the beauty of ice skating, to figure skating, to gymnastics, what the human spirit is capable of, and the beauty that can be created. So
yeah.
I just find music is vulnerable. It puts you at, you're vulnerable in the sense that there is so much that goes into what you're doing, just as it's vulnerable when all the eyes are on you on the Olympic skaters. I can't skate, by the way. I just think about it just because it's like, I can barely skate forward and maybe backwards on a good day. But like, I think about watching what they do and the pressure they must feel to land that jump. And even the best of skaters don't land it, right? Similar to music, where all that goes into learning it, there's so many dimensions to the physicality of what we do on our instruments or on our voice, where the beauty of it to me is that it's vulnerable, that it can all fit together with, you know, to create something beautiful, but you have to put it all at risk in order to do that. I find that to be just incredible, in that that perfection's not the goal, that beauty and creation is born in that vulnerability. It's hard work, and kind of intimating that with the sports analogies too, where, you know, the amount of work it takes to do what we do, through the study of scales, through the study of, you know, just exercises, what it takes to just do all of the things correctly on the instrument so that we sound good, right? We, you know, sometimes you laugh about, oh, a beginner oboe sound is just quite loud or whatever. You know, we all start somewhere, right? And so then what it takes to then create beauty, a beautiful sound, takes a lot of repetition, takes a lot of discipline. And then, you know, eventually being at a place where you can create, and I say eventually, we don't have to wait. I worked with a beginner earlier this morning, actually. She comes before school sometimes to have lessons. And we talked about, you know, she's working on just how her fingers cover the hole, something very beginner in that sense that we all have to go through. But we talked about, like, boy, when you can do that, think about how you're going to be able to play this piece of music smoothly, and then how it's going to sound more like a song, because it'll be more connected. So it can come at many different levels, but I think when you listen to that top of the top level, like, I think that artistry is quite beautiful. Benefits coming to that, I think, like a lot of things, it's not a straight line. And so when I work with students, so, you know, we all, including myself, get frustrated from time to time. You know, you work and you work and you work, and sometimes you get up there and you're like, wait a second, why do I feel like all that I worked on seems to have taken 10 steps backwards today? And we could probably claim that in so many different ways. So why learn music? Well, when we problem solve through this creative art, I think that it it pushes our resilience to a level, I think, you know, where it's also okay to say, today I'm going to take a break, because I'm going to learn in another way. And there's a, I think there's that resilience that we get through. So I guess these examples of why, what's important about learning to play music, is I think that all that we kind of go through, like, develops us as humans. It creates, I think, the community that's involved. I hear students talk time and time again about, you know, if I were to ask them the question, why do you learn music, or why do you want to play music? So much of it is, I want that community. And so I feel very, very blessed in my professional communities to create music with colleagues. And what can only happen in that moment when we're all creating together is something that's just really beautiful. And again, it celebrates the creativity that we have as people to be able to do that. And really, the power of what that does is when we do that together, is just, it reaches a whole other level. So I think, and then the dimensions, right? There's the like what I was giving examples of, the physicality of learning an instrument that leads to artistry. I think there's also the history of music, that we can look back to the historical study of what we do, and the prominent voices that are given to composers. So whether that is Mozart from, you know, back in the 1700s in Europe, to I just was rehearsing with a faculty woodwind quintet from Gustavus at my house yesterday, and born in the mid 70s, who wrote this beautiful wind quintet. And I was like, wow, I've not heard her before. I can't wait to learn more music by this composer. But what's interesting is that you, working with composers as I do now, I recently did a concerto performance by Oscar Navarro, who's a composer out of Spain. We're now working together to see how can I commission a new work by this composer. There's something very powerful about the current voices. What can I learn about the Spanish culture through his writing? What can I learn from, if I were to find a piece of music by, say, one of my favorite composers right now is Valerie Coleman, and her perspective as an African-American woman, how does that come through the music, and what can I learn from that? So the dimensions in that question, as you can see, there's just a lot of ways to go about it. So I guess I'll pause there, but like, I could just keep going. As I said, how long is the podcast on?
Why? Right. I mean, it's just so phenomenal. You've touched on so many great points too. Like, being a part of a group that's, you know, coming together to make something even more beautiful, to even studying different cultures through music and the composer's point of view. And even now, in modern music, you know, we look at Mozart and Bach and Dvorak and all those people, but let's bring it into a current, you know, what's going on now. And I think that's so cool that you can extend that in music
Really, well, and you think about and how long has that been, right? I mean, we could point even earlier than this, but I think about how music through really tough times of slavery, what did our music do during those times? Or I think of even
celebrations of
freedom, or music being a part of inaugurations of presidents, or mm-hmm. Think of our military bands, or mm-hmm. think of, you know, there's just so many ways that it kind of comes into our world, mm-hmm. that really ties to an expression of time. And even when you study music of say Mozart and this dimension of study, it's like, well, how did the music during the time of the Enlightenment, what right. did that mean? And so the power for that to kind of weave in, just a point of time and look through the lens of that, or how visual art and music align too, which is fascinating. It's an incredible study. One of my adult students that I see, we often will work with studying, you know, music that will be performed in our various professional orchestras mm-hmm. in the city, and then she'll go and hear those performances. So we might study music of Brahms mm-hmm. out of Germany, and then she'll go hear a Brahms symphony wow. performed by a professional orchestra. And so I feel like there's a lot of ways that you can kind of weave it in the city too. And even for kids, you know, the beginner, like a beginner book might have just the melody of, say, Hall of a Mountain King by Grieg, right?
Yeah.
And so you could study like maybe a little bit of the theme, and then you show this to the kid. It's like, guess what? This is written by somebody. There's somebody behind this music, and it's a bigger piece. So then they can learn about that even at a younger age as they're starting an instrument. So I think it's got a lot of power to kind of come into our world, into our understanding of the world. Sure.
So Karin, can you tell us more about the connections between music and learning? I mean, we've really talked a lot about learning culture, learning parts of it as young kids listening. Are there anything more that we want to talk about?
You know, when you think of the process itself, right? If I just put myself in the middle of a performance. Okay. So my most recent performance was with Minnesota Opera. Mm-hmm. And we just wrapped last week a 3-week run of two short one act operas. Okay. And if I think about that, there was a small orchestra, and the conductor's facing the opposite. The singers are behind because we're all on stage, and it's all, you know, what it took to coordinate that was something of, you know, took a lot of composite trust. That's for sure. Yeah. But when I think about what goes through my mind when I'm playing, right, it's like mm-hmm. I'm doing all that I need to do on my instrument, which is the clarinet, mm-hmm. and I'm playing, you know, I have to learn all the notes. I have to understand what key I'm in. I have to understand the patterns and the rhythms and the pulse and the speed, right? You hear something fast, you're like, whoa. So then you have to practice that, and you have to work on the agility of that, right? So there's that whole side of learning a piece, but not only that, during that process, I am listening to the strings, the percussion, the piano. I'm also watching the conductor. I'm listening to the singers. I'm listening to all of my wind and brass colleagues around me, because it's not just my part.
Yeah.
It's how that fits with everybody. So if I think about what my brain is doing all at the same time, I think when it comes to brain development, I would absolutely love to sit down with a neurologist and say, that's got to amount to something. Yeah. We did at Gustavus College, there's a Nobel conference every year, and there's a topic, and then scientists in that field are invited to our campus for a symposium of sorts or a conference. Mm-hmm. And so one of the years, my early years at Gustavus, the topic was the brain. And I do remember that one of the scientists talked about the musician's brain because mm-hmm. of thinking of all in all of these dimensions at the same time. So I think that's one like incredible benefit that happens for that. And I, you know, and you hear about, say, like Parkinson's patients using music. Mm-hmm. You think you hear about that being helpful to Alzheimer's patients. Mm-hmm. I recently saw a most beautiful story that brought tears to my eyes, where there's a clarinetist by the name of Larry Combs. Larry Combs was a long time, he was principal clarinet of the Chicago Symphony Orchestra. In the orchestra world, that's like one of the, you know, beautiful. One of the best orchestras, right? Like just incredible history and incredible musicians in that group. And Larry was principal clarinet a long time, and I greatly admire his work. He is suffering from dementia now and is in a memory care unit in his at this time. And the family had given permission for this to be shared. So I watched this story. And from what I understand, there, you know, I mean, he hadn't touched a clarinet in a long time, but there was one in his room. And somehow, like through this story, and I won't tell it exactly, but the point being, he gave a concert on that clarinet and somehow remembered in this advanced stage of dementia how to play. And literally just such a beautiful thing, and where it's like, what it has a power, I think, to connect neurologically. So I think there's interesting examples through that study that come into play. And you think, well, why is a kid should, you know, kids play, or why should kids do music? I think it, when we develop that early on, you develop, I think, what I talked about with resilience. There's a work ethic you develop in practicing something like this and working through frustrations and having to do something regularly in order to improve. There's the getting to do that great thing with your friends. I have a couple of young high school students who will travel Europe with a band made up of kids from all over, and they'll get to make music together. And I can pretty much guarantee that's something they'll never forget. Yeah. So I think that, you know, you have that benefit as well. Mm-hmm. When it comes to, you know, young kids, I think there's so much you can do in helping them explore. And I think, you know, there's, you know, very informally having instruments around your house.
Yeah. Yeah.
Letting them play. Be their own composers and play and explore and have fun with that. There are many, and this maybe would help some of your listeners too, but there are many great classes out there called of different, like I get branded classes, if you were like the ones that are incorporated or are companies like Kinder Music or Music Together.
Yeah.
And there are different, these like toddler classes, baby classes, where you can go and sit in a class and teachers lead you through. We did that when our kids were little, and it's lovely.
Yeah.
There's also a formalized study you can do for kids that start this process if it seems right for your kid, like through what's called Suzuki training. Mm-hmm. Okay. So Suzuki violin, if you've ever seen a very young child with a very tiny violin,
little violin,
you make them very small. And so Suzuki is a training that teaches kids, for lack of a better explanation, by ear at first.
Yeah, listening.
And Suzuki bases this off of how we learn language, right?
Right.
Certain kids are able to, they're going to say mama, dada, or find words for things, right?
Yes.
That only we as parents, or maybe their kindergarten teacher or whatever, as they get older and they start writing in this way, or sound spelling in kindergarten and
stuff
like that, where you just let them explore.
Yeah.
And then, and so very similar in Suzuki training, Suzuki will allow, or kind of the philosophy is that let them do that by ear, and then the reading catches up. So very much like we learn language. So, you know, I think when we come back to some of those benefits, I think those are maybe puts us in a couple of different directions. Hopefully I haven't gone off on too far of a tangent for you.
No. I think I took my daughter, Nicole, to Kinder Music too at age 3, I believe. And I think it's just, like you said, letting them clink around on the tambourine or the drums or, you know, little piano things or what have you, but playing along and listening and kind of learning those early skills about like reading and other things where you listen and you kind of do it by trial and, you know, learn, okay, well, here's some rules that we apply later on. So that also helps. So there, I really know that there is some great, great things in that early music. So awesome.
Yeah. It's so awesome. Yeah. There's just a lot of entry points, I think, for kids and for students. And those Kinder Music programs and programs like that, there are a couple of, you know, I think similar types of things I think are great. I think there are examples through like community ed centers and you know, where there are just different points of contact.
Yeah, that early learning.
Again, like with various ages, as we have in Minnesota, programs like Minnesota Youth Symphonies, Greater Twin Cities Youth Symphonies. There's a group called Minnesota Junior Winds, which are bands that could come even outside of your school day, where you can join kids from all over. And I think there are just ways that there are a lot of places for students to come into that. And then certainly, you know, mentioning this after these things, but not to diminish, and that is the importance of our program, our school programs, in our our classroom music that students get exposed to through their elementary school programs, preschool programs, and then certainly band and choir and orchestra that come into the schools are very important too.
Yeah, I totally agree. Do you remember having Mrs. Wyman when she was a music teacher and
yes.
learn all that deep in the heart of Texas music?
Yes.
And, yeah.
Yes. Or you have the instruments like the different xylophone or
maracas and
yeah, the different things that you got to play. And what's fascinating is that what comes into elementary music is a very, very evolved and beautiful study. That folks can get certified in. St. Thomas, for example, in St. Paul has a great program in some of what's called ORF in Kodaly, Kodaly. There are methodologies within teaching elementary music that when you start to look into what goes into that really develop kids. And if, you know, if it's, you know, an appropriate, I guess, point to bring up at this point in the conversation, I think it's really critical that we keep reminding ourselves culturally how important it is to support the arts. And it's, I feel like historically, I feel like throughout my career, and I've been teaching a long time. Even when I was, you know, learning as a young student, I feel like we have been fighting to keep funding for the arts always.
Always.
So confusing to me, I think.
Why?
Why is that a fight? You know, and I don't think it needs to be at the expense of other things. I mean, I definitely see the benefit of athletics too, and the way that supports community and the way that we learn through that process as well. I just feel like fight for it. And I want athletics to have the support they need also, because I think that's incredibly important and reaches a lot of kids. But for whatever reason it is, we're always in that kind of climbing uphill feeling with the arts. Yeah. And Minneapolis is going through a very tough time right now, and a lot of cuts. And we've been around this block a lot of times.
It's important to bring that out, because like you said, not every kid is going to be athletically inclined. And we do have FIED and things for kids, but some kids gravitate towards the arts and music, and that's where they find their joy, and they can express themselves in a way that might not be in the athletic world. And to be able to diminish that or make that anything less just doesn't seem fair for kids, you know, music and the arts. Mrs. Wyman was our music teacher. Mr. Wyman was our sixth grade arts teacher. But you know, that's, I just feel like, kudos to you to bring that up, because really that is fundamental learning, you know?
Right. I think you're right that there's like, I feel like we need entry points into something beautiful like this. And we're as, you know, just as we need, you know, debate and speech club and theater and visual arts and whether a student or a child or any of us want to explore in multitude of ways, I think that's great. It's fun when you see, you know, athletes who were in band or like, you know, one of my favorite things in the high school where my kids went is, you know, the football player would come grab their instrument at halftime and march with a band. And I'm like, okay, that's amazing.
That's
but I also
cool.
Love that there's a place for, like you said, like, okay, you know what? Like for me, I am not athletically inclined at all. So I was very happy to have music as an outlet, but I think, you know, it's just offering that place, but also lifting up these opportunities is really quite important. And the cuts that have been made in Minneapolis, the thing that I get really, you know, I guess sad on a lot of levels for that, not the least of which is my brother teaches in music in the Minneapolis schools, but also because the cuts that they're being made are going to disproportionately affect those who don't have means in order to participate. And I think it's just really important that we are able to keep that front and center.
You believe there's a certain kind of music that resonates best for learning? Before, you know, growing up in my musical history, it was always, the classics, it's Mozart, it's Brahms, it's those kinds of things that are gentle and, you know, something that can help resonate with our parasympathetic nervous system and things that just kind of calm you down But what about other things? I mean, what are your thoughts on that from your perspective?
But do you mean at the, like the earliest ages or?
Yeah, basically at the early learning ages, even into elementary school. I mean, is that current thinking that it's really about the classical music, or does it matter what kind of music kids are listening to?
I mean, I think that, you know, broad-based, I think approaching it where I think it could be anything, truly. I would say that there's going to be a field of study in those who have like PhDs in like early childhood music are going to mm-hmm. probably have some really like concrete examples of kind
Bringing
of the why. But what I would, But I would say, you know, just from my perspective, a lot, like what you'll find in a lot of early books, it's from the folk tradition.
Yeah.
It might be from, like I mentioned, Edvard Grieg. So, mm-hmm. you know, like music from Peer Gynt, like Morning Mood or Hall of the Mountain King, you might find it. And what makes that accessible sometimes, it's something that kids might be able to sing back or like digest. It might not be something that's super busy, but mm-hmm. I don't know that from my perspective, I think there's a lot you could do with that. So I guess the response would be twofold. One, there is a whole field of study. So like, that's fascinating. Yeah. Like you could go like so deep down the research and examples and what that does mm-hmm. when it comes to my like kind of casual approach to this answer. When with what I experience, I find that kids respond to a lot of different things, and that it's actually fun for them to say, or fun to share with them, here's Johannes Brahms.
Yeah.
And celebrate that.
Mm-hmm.
But then maybe say, here's Valerie Coleman.
Yeah.
And what do you hear in that? What do you hear in her music? And, or you might play, there's a wonderful piece. I was just working with somebody today that was written, I would say it was like probably written in the 1980s mm-hmm. and telling the story of Pinocchio. So like there's so much, like, I think that you could use. Prokofiev, a Russian composer, wrote a beautiful piece that many have heard of called Peter and the Wolf.
Mm, yes.
Very much a story. The clarinet, we get to be the cat. So that's kind of fun. But I think that can be very accessible too. So, you know, I think that there's a lot of ways and kind of ways to get into that. I think what's fun for kids is that they could experience a lot of different approaches to this. So Minnesota Orchestra, St. Paul Chamber Orchestra do family concerts that are geared toward kids in really fun ways. I think that's amazing.
Yeah.
I think Kinder Music Together programs like that will use different genres of music. Mm-hmm. Students. And then even if you like, for those who are in beginning band, if you look through those books, you're going to see kind of a combination of things. And I think that a lot of what's published now for young band students is trying to kind of combine folk music with introducing them to composers who are maybe no longer living, but provide a great foundation for us. And then also, you know, exposing them to what's written today. Mm-hmm. Students in high school bands, and even in middle school bands, oftentimes can zoom in with living composers now. And, COVID made that even, it's like they could have done that before COVID, but now it's such a thing.
Yeah.
That I feel like I'm seeing that and living that so much now where like you could work on a piece and you could bring the composer in and work. So is it more accessible or less accessible? I think it's also cool to just leave that to the listener, even a young listener.
Yeah.
Not to underestimate, you know, and say, oh, it has to be one way because
I like that. It's open to anyone's interpretation.
Exactly. Exactly.
Cool. I like it. Never exclude.
Yeah.
Okay. So I know that we were talking a little bit about prenatal and brain development, and there is definitely a resurgence of study that's just focused on that. And we could go down that rabbit hole every day.
Yes.
But because you are so accomplished in music, I thought, well, we could give it a shot and see. Do we know anything about musicians' brains versus a child who's not exposed or who does not practice music? I know you and I had chatted a little bit before, and just when you're putting all the pieces together, like earlier you were mentioning, we're listening not only to our music and watching the director, but listening to the timpani and listening to the flute section and the blah, blah, blah. So I'm kind of going down the already answer, but what do you think?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, there's obviously, you know, layers to that. Cause I think, you know, just like, you don't want me to be your next person at bat in a softball game. You just don't, because I'm not going to get on base. So like, unless I get walked. So I do believe that for some it's like, yeah, music, you know, we're all different. So I feel like, you know, there is that, but you know, when it comes to exposure, I think that that's great, you know, and I think, you know, if we're at least meeting students in the elementary classroom and they're getting that as part of their training, I think that's awesome. I think it's about access for everybody so that if they want it, if they would like to pursue it, I think, you know, I just, so I'm really trying to put a lot of my work, some of my work, I guess, is to say right now is behind commissioning new music. It's behind, I'm on the board for the Minnesota Wind Orchestra, which is a newly developing professional wind ensemble in the state of Minnesota. Cool. So with that, it's creating this professional organization that not only will take what the symphony orchestra has in the professional world, but also for band, creating a professional ensemble. A big part of what we're doing, though, is interacting with schools and providing scholarships for students to be able to study music and trying to, you know, increase accessibility in every possible way. So I think to me, that's what's important. Now, tell me the original question again. It was,
just if there's a difference in a musician's brain versus someone who's not been exposed or doesn't practice. And I think you're answering it by saying, hey, let's get that exposure and that accessibility for everybody. And then let's see how that impacts their life. And
right. And I think that maybe, and for some, again, I can't say like every single person needs to play music. I mean, I would love it. Sure. Yeah. It's but it would be like telling me, okay, you better get out on the basketball court. And it'd be like, oh my goodness.
Yeah, no, I can't do that.
I appreciate the story. So for the listeners, because as Kathy said at the beginning, we, you know, grew up across the street from each other. So Kathy knows my dad, Blair.
Yes, Blair.
So this is a great story with this. My daughter played basketball and they had a day where it was like bring your grandparent or parent and that you would play a game with your kids. Well, it happened to fall in a time where both my husband and I had a conflict. So my dad went. So Blair was out there and one of Katie's friends, Grace, tells her mom on the way home after. So my dad, bless his heart, he's out there playing basketball with the girls. And Katie's friend Grace says to her mom, who then shared it with me after, she said, well, mom, because Katie's grandpa was there, you weren't the worst one out there. So we all have our gifts, right?
Yeah. Blair, but you know what? I love Blair because I can just see him out there doing his best.
Doing it all.
And get that basketball in the hoop. I can see that. It's so sweet.
So I think, you know, but I do think, I would come back to, I do think that the brain has developed in a really special way. I think, yes, are there other ways to get that? Probably for everybody, there's a way to find that, right? But it's, I do think that accessibility piece is really critical. Mm-hmm. And that through those examples I shared, I do think it develops critical thinkers. And it's why, you know, kind of my other soapbox is, can we keep STEM, STEAM, please?
STEAM,
as I believe in that. And in fact, so many of my students at Gustavus who are not music majors are in the sciences. Mm-hmm. A fantastic example of STEAM. They're like brilliant physics majors, chemistry majors, biology majors, et cetera, who play music. And so having arts a part of that equation, I think is kind of keeps us keeps that our minds developing in a critical way, but yet, you know, with the arts, I feel like there's so much more power to that. Yeah. A culture that embraces, I go back to the word vulnerability, mm-hmm. of that process.
Yeah.
I feel like then when we're solving complex problems in our society, in our world, doesn't it make us converse in a way that maybe we're listening to each other more, or maybe we're
can have an understanding.
Yeah. There's a
good and the things that we both can understand together. Yeah.
When I feel, that's like when we're creating something, if I use again the musical creation again, I feel like that is one that is really like, if I feel like that where we're in that place of creating, you have to be forgiving of yourself.
Yes.
Because things can go at any minute.
And the interdependence of everybody together, I think, is so inclusive. You don't care what they can do as long as they can play their part. You know, it doesn't matter. anything. It's just, okay, you're the saxophone player, so you have to play those guys, and you're the melody, so you got to come together. But it's that interdependence. I think that's just so important about music and arts.
Well, and I think this example may be applicable to share at this time. There's one, so part of what I do as a freelance performer is I might be called by a contractor to play a gig, right? I might do like something that comes up one time.
Yeah.
There was a group, I'm not gonna remember the name of it, of the organization, but it was the conductor would travel and do this, I guess, event, if we call it that, mm-hmm. in different business conventions. So there was a meeting of at the Convention Center Minneapolis, and it was 3M's meeting mm-hmm. of executives from around, like they pulled it like top leadership, like executives from 3M, mm-hmm. and they were at this meeting, this leadership meeting. And what this person and entity did is I was hired as a musician mm-hmm. as part of an orchestra. We got there early in this conference room, and he's rehearsing us on a piece, happened to be by Brahms. And we were rehearsing it. And then he just said, then from there, he didn't like set us up to say, you're going to experience A, B, and C. But he said, what's going to happen is the attendees of this conference are going to come in and they're going to surround you. So it wasn't like orchestra audience, like it was like in a sure. conference room, and they were sitting all around us.
Wow.
Certainly. And then he said, just go with it basically. But what he did was, I'll give just a few examples, is he conducted us through, it was a very short work, mm-hmm. conducted us through the work. So, okay, great. Then he tried it another way. He got up there, and if you can think of a conductor over conducting, like just going like getting like being way too much.
Yeah. And
even as on like people at the conference, whether or not they had musical talent, you could observe that he was being absurd.
Oh.
And like, so he's up there. And we as musicians, we start responding in a way where like I start looking at the concertmaster, who's the first chair violin, mm-hmm. and I'm like watching her. And I'm listening and I'm listening even when the conductor's conducting, but like I had to tune that out because I couldn't do what I needed to do.
Yeah.
So then, you know, he did a little bit of that, and then he would get like, what do you observe? And they would say, well, geez, they kind of stopped watching you.
Yeah.
And they were like, they were watching each other more than they were watching you. And then he did another example where he did almost nothing. And people observed.
Oh.
And what was fascinating was the parallel was being a leader.
Yeah.
And how do you entrust your team to do the best possible work?
Fascinating. Right. What a great lesson.
Fascinating, right? And so and that went on for like an hour plus of different examples like that.
I love that.
How we bind together. But like, to me, that's like when you talk about why do we learn music? Why is it good? If kids can do that, can they resolve their playground issues?
Yeah.
If they can learn to do music together, if they can learn to create something together, there's maybe something
that. That.
But I thought that was a really powerful.
That's so cool. Love it. Cool. See, there's just so many good things. Okay. So here's one for you. You said that mostly you're working with older kids and college kids, but you do have some littles. Is there a good age that you recommend parents to introduce kids to playing music? What are your thoughts?
Well, that's a great, I think, like I said, there's a lot of entry points. So I think for young kids, right, you've got the Kinder Musics and those types of things, as I've mentioned,
mm-hmm.
if you want something more formal for your young child, I mean, you will see 4-year-olds, rarely younger than that, but sometimes you'll see 4 or 5-year-old, like with the tiny violins again, or others. Mm-hmm. There's also Suzuki piano. Okay. That's, you know, and there's also traditional piano. You could probably start younger. I think it really depends on the kid.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, and just like what they're interested in and whatnot. When it comes to, learning, say like a band instrument, you have to be a little bigger to be able to do that. Like, traditionally band is starting when you're 10 or 11.
Uh-huh.
And so that's going to be kind of through your public school. There are a few adapted instruments that sometimes you see younger kids start on. I've seen like really tiny trumpets or really tiny flutes that curve around this way. So you're not reaching.
Sure, not.
you know, that kind of thing. But, but that's, you know, I would say with musical, like with instruments that you'd find in the band, that's more commonly coming into your, you know, fifth and sixth grade year. But I think, you know, when it comes to like how early, when it, the, how early is too early for exploring, just go right at it.
Yeah, exactly. But
like, you know, I remember our oldest, who's now a professional tenor sax player, actually, he, when he was a baby, and I would sing a note, he would match that pitch and would just like sing to the pitch.
Wow.
Which was really interesting. And he did that before he talked. And so, I don't know.
Wow. Phenomenal. You know, stuff like, I mean, that is brilliant.
I just don't even know. But like, I so think that like, there's so many kids who like, it's just kind of fun to like put them out. Or I would go into our kids' kindergarten classroom. There was a woman who had put together this incredible series called Bravo. So it was like this, like she put together the curriculum so that any parent, musically trained or not, could go in and volunteer in the classroom. And there were these lessons you could do with the kids. So it was a cool way for parents to get involved in whatever. Well, I of course went off script a lot being a musician, but one of the things that they did was they would play, like I would play a piece of music and I would just tell the students, okay, dance in place. Like I'd give them their circle. So they weren't like all over the classroom. But I was like, here's your circle of space. Dance how you think the music is. And they would just find the spirit. And you asked before, like what music? Well, you could do anything.
Yeah.
Or have them color. Like, color, what do you think this is? What story is this music telling, do you think?
Yeah.
And so guess what? Everybody, there's no wrong answers.
Yeah. So,
you know, I think that's
so good. I love it.
Yeah.
I used to do that with my kiddos. I, when I was teaching my kinders, I would always just have music on in the background. So they were always exposed to it while they were doing whatever they were doing. And it was just soothing. And then some of my kids that had some behavior, you know, increased behavior issues and things like that, I would bring them in and just play the classical music and just let them.
Well, and you talked about the parasympathetic nerve, and you know, certainly there's a lot written about Mozart specifically. Yep. And it is, and the reason for that, by the way, for as I understand it, is that because the phrasing is balanced, there's an elegance about the approach to the melodic writing that, you know, there are reasons that musically you could back that up. It there is like a lot of like connection in that, and research that's been done particular to that style of music from the,
especially like our, my kiddos that would be a little bit ADHD or something like that. Sure. It really helped them focus their body and just, and you know, I'd say, we're just going to do a little breathing while we listen. And we're just going to, you know, do things like that. And then these kids loved it. They looked forward to coming to my room because they knew it. That was a space in their day where they could just be.
I do believe that that is a beautifully helpful thing. I have a dear friend who is a violinist, professional violinist, but she has recently become certified as an occupational therapist. She was working with a stroke victim who is recovering, in this victim or the stroke survivor, such like, I think he was like in his late 40s, so very young. And was a piano and was, is a pianist.
Okay.
And, but you know, because of the deficit on whatever hand it was that was affected by the stroke. But one of the things that was helping develop the muscle memory in the hand was to get back to playing piano. So what she did was, as a musician, she's been writing, and I think she may be still working with this person, but writing etudes or exercises on the piano. And that is helping to develop the hand, but also brings like back that, like that there's something very intrinsic about that music for this. And I was like, wow, what a cool, like,
that's so cool.
You talk about the connection of science and music. Here's somebody who is a, you know, using their musical training in their occupational therapy.
Yeah.
And it's like, I think those examples could run really deep. But I think it's those kinds of connections that might help that ADHD kid, or that might, you know, be, a pathway for, say, somebody with Parkinson's, or like we talked before about, you know, dementia and the power that music has to bring.
Kind
of connect.
I just, I love music, so I'm so fascinated, and I loved listening to your story. Okay, so let's say we have kiddos that are, they start out because their mom and dad want them to be in band in fourth grade, and so they get their instrument and they they do their band, and then they grow into their middle school years or even in their high school years, and like, oh, I don't want to do band anymore. I mean, are there ways that we can keep kids interested in music, or do we push them? Do we say, okay, well, then you're done? I mean, as even as a parent too, Karen, I mean, do you feel like we should push our kids in music? Do we just let them do it? What are your thoughts on that?
But you know, that I feel like, sure. I mean, as a parent, I come to that, or I'm coaching parents a lot with that. I think that's a complicated thing, of course. You know, I think on the one hand, I think it's learning to be resilient when we face challenges. It's not just band is not one season. Like, yeah. Season, though, yeah. Many of our athletes are training all year round and mm-hmm. stuff like that. But it's, I do think sometimes the perseverance beyond mm-hmm. is important.
Good point.
But there is a point at which it's not for everybody.
Yeah.
Right. And so I think it's tricky. You know, I think I do try to help students and parents understand that sometimes it's good to weather those like
ups and downs. Right.
It's a straight line. And so sometimes that target of saying, you know what, let's try to stick it out till this point.
There you go.
And like do our best. Mm-hmm. But like, you know, how.
Yes. You know, and that's another whole.
So, you know, it's like I had a student who very talented, like very talented kiddo.
Yeah.
And the parent had said right away, they're like, you know, this particular kiddo of mine doesn't really stay committed to things very long. Mm-hmm. And so she's like, I hope that she'll last in this. Well, very talented. Things came quite easy to the student, did pretty well and didn't really stick with it. And I, you know, the trick there is it would be nice to pick something so that eventually they learn, right? But then there's a point at which, well, where do you go? Now, I think that this kiddo ended up doing choir, mm-hmm. which was, you know, good. Yeah. Like finding a point and sometimes exploring. It's like balancing that individual, the person with,
yeah, that's a good point,
you know. But I do think I do like to think, have parents try to think twice before saying, oh yeah, let's just move on.
Yeah,
you know, because there is a commitment that, you know, that you have to have in order to improve. So I think that it's, you know, I think it's walking that line. Yeah, that balance. And mm-hmm. but you know, also knowing that sometimes we maybe try something different.
Yeah.
Or if you're as a parent, you're saying, you know, listen, I really want my kid to have well-rounded experiences. You could go to another form of the arts, but I do, you know, try to encourage them to think about like, though it's not something you can just like, oh, tomorrow I'm going to be a singer.
Yeah.
And then Friday or Saturday, Sunday, yeah. maybe I'll be a singer. Like, doesn't work like player. That. Right? Yeah. Right. Right. It's like, and so there is that like stick with itness you have to have
there you go.
In order to develop it. Right. Mm-hmm. It's no wonder I'm a terrible golfer because I never golf. Yeah. Like, or, you know, it's like once every 4 years. So I did finally get out with my kids. This was a number of years ago. And one of my kids said, well, mom, you're not nearly as bad as I thought you'd be. I was like, all right. Excellent. Thanks, honey. I'll call that a win. But you know, so there is that, but I think that's where, it's also okay that not every kiddo needs to be a professional musician. So I, you know, but I think those are the kinds of conversations maybe to have around that topic.
We talked a little bit before about the benefits of being in a part of a group and, you know, doing all that stuff. But if we're switching topics a little bit, what are your thoughts on the rise in screen use for children, and does that impact creativity or contributes to a lack of problem solving abilities? What are your thoughts? I mean, this is just purely coincidental at the moment, you know. It doesn't have to be like, oh, there are these studies, but I mean, what are your thoughts personally about that?
I mean, I think we do need to balance that. I think, you know, for some, I think it does vary to, I think for some, it's a helpful release, you know, and right. I think some of the things that students or kids might do on screen, like, you know, that will tap into creative thinking.
That's true.
You know, there is something to be said, but it is, you know, just that amount of blue light, that just that amount is, mm-hmm. you know, that can drain us. I think the one thing that I find, and I don't know if this is a coincidental, as you say, but it's like the, even with the shortness of text messaging, even with the, you know, the games, like you're, if you're gaming all day long and it's like, you're doing your game, like everything is short, that then when it comes to the kind of focus it takes to practice an instrument beyond, I feel like it taps a different part of ourselves than that. And so I don't know if it affects it. What I sometimes notice as a college professor, one of the classes I teach has a writing component to it. And I know just feels like students, their writing needs a lot more work in terms of not being quite so segmented.
Right.
And fluidity of ideas beyond.
Development of.
So I just, that's the kind of thing it leaves me going, well, I wonder, I don't know, but I wonder.
Yeah. That's interesting.
And what it takes to focus in that level. Now I would, you know, I also would say, like, I don't know every style of learning or every kid, of course. So you wonder if for some, if that balance isn't a helpful release. So I don't, you know.
Yeah, good point. And I appreciate that you're bringing both sides of it into it, because sometimes myself as a teacher, I can get so hyper-focused on, okay, let's get off the screens. Let's not do that. But I think to counterbalance what you're saying, really, you know, some people need that release for a little bit, and it's all about balance.
Balance is, I think, the key. But I do think that in those extreme cases, I think it definitely makes it tricky to then live in a brain space that is like music.
Creative and
creative and dimensional.
Yes. And more, like you said, developed rather than a short text message kind of, you know,
right.
Not real developed thoughts or different processes. So, okay. Love it. And then last, what are your recommendations for parents who are interested in getting their kids involved? Is there any, like we had mentioned before, kindergarten music, et cetera, where, if you were starting out with Karen as a mom and your littles were, you know, getting to 3, 4, 5, 6 years old, what would you recommend the segue, or how do you get them started, or where?
I would say, look at your community centers. Like if you're in Minneapolis, look at community, you know, some of the community services. I would take my kids to some of the summer programs in Minneapolis when my kids were little. That was like really great. And there's just different points of entry with that. So I think that would be a great place to look for, like, especially before you're in school. And then, you know, when you're in school, there's going to be a lot of things built in, if supposed that they don't cut it back too much. That those are incredible resources in your own communities. You can definitely search for those specific programs I mentioned to see if there's something like that happening near you, kind of near where you're living. But I think those are all great ways. You can also go online and look for ways to make your own instruments at home.
Oh, I love that.
Play music at home and encourage your kids to color to it, to dance to it. You could also create your own class at home and like do your own kind of like exploratory like activities with your kids. And even, you know, with a couple of plates, a stapler and some popcorn, you can make yourself a rattly percussion instrument. So, you know, I think there's just a lot of, I think there'd be a lot of fun things on online that you could explore with that too.
I love that. That's a great idea. Well, Karen, I just am so grateful for the time that you shared with us today. You are very busy and so accomplished. I'm grateful that you took time to jump in into my little podcast, but thank you. It was wonderful to connect with
you. Wonderful to connect. And I hope we can get all of us together soon.
Thank you so much, Karen. I hope that your son's baseball game is successful and lots of fun and warm.
Yes, let's hope.
Stay warm.
All right. Thank you.
My dear, you have a good rest of your day and say hi to your family. Give your mom and dad love.
We'll do. All right. Take care,
Karen. Bye-bye.